I want you to know that this episode marks the end of a long 2-year journey. I started this podcast 2 years ago to the date of this episode being published because I wanted to find some way of connecting with you as I publicly struggled to figure out what was next. Lots of things have changed since then, and this is my way of telling you that this is the last episode of Phil's Philosophies podcast for the foreseeable future, and it's definitely the end of season 2, because I may have finally found my philosophy, but more on that at the end of this episode. Let's take it back to March 2019, to my debut and final performance as P. Smoove the Rapper Extraordinaire from my final studio episode as a performer, Season 8, Episode 3. There are few surviving records of studio's final shows from 2018 to 2020, of which none of these shows can be found online. Mostly because after the events we talked about last time, studio was prohibited from uploading anything else to their YouTube channel.
After our first show for season 7, studio had to end the live stream. And I don't think has it been back since? I don't believe so.
We knew the writing was on the wall, but when intercollegiate politics reached a breaking point and the COVID-19 pandemic shattered any semblance of who was in control, it felt only natural that
Studio 4109 was canceled and that the funds for Studio were going to be allocated to other venues.
Very sad. I never got to go to one. So Studio has died.
I'm your host, Philip Warfield, and this is Phil's Philosophies podcast, a show dedicated to the discovery of the spark, the things that are meaningful in our lives. And for many years, this show, Studio 4109 Live, was just that, a spark. Now, it's gone. This is that story. This is episode 3, The Curtain Call. I want to introduce you to my pal, Delaney. If you've been listening to the show for a while, you know she was a guest in season 1. She's back again to tell us about the time she was executive director, right after Armandi Stokes Hicks, whom we heard from last time.
So I grew up in a military family, so I lived everywhere, absolutely everywhere. And I was also homeschooled. And so bouncing like around the country, well, around the world really, and seeing, experiencing different lifestyles, different cultures and stuff like that, there's a lot of key pieces of development I missed from the American culture when I was living overseas. And I think a lot of that was the sense of humor. And so like I found studio funny and I found the jokes funny, but more than that, I was focused on the performance and like seeing the facial reactions and like working with this cast, like body language and stuff like that. And so the jokes themselves, I often didn't get just because to this day, I don't get a lot of them just because it's just an area of my development I missed. And I'm getting a master's in psychology now and I understand more why I miss that and why I am the way I am, but that key piece of culture that is in humor I missed. And so it was kind of funny to think that I work in comedy when I didn't have that, but yeah.
Delaney was determined to make her year as director pretty different, especially considering her background.
When I was in charge, I wanted to do a lot with studio. I wanted to move it to be more of a personal kind of a space, to bring comedy more. I felt like it was a little bit too like SNL, Saturday Night Live, and I was trying to bring it more into like a true comedy show that you would go to, like if you were on vacation like in Nashville or something like that, and you went to a comedy performance. Unfortunately, I couldn't do that. There are some things you just can never change. And so I did, though, make efforts to make it more of a personal space.
Delaney tried to appeal to the powers that be by refocusing the conversation onto mental health and laughter. But even though she had administrative support, she still faced several different new challenges, some of which no director had ever had to deal with. And by the time season 8 ended, there are only 400 to 500 students still showing up, and that was for the finale.
Yeah, so I had this idea when I was executive producing, and I put it into action as director. And that was, so when I was director, we used to have 4 shows, and they took one of our shows away. I can't remember why, I think for budget reasons. And so in the place of that show, I organized an evangelistic series that studio put on. And so we had skits that were comedy skits, but they were designed to point toward Christ. And we did it for 4 nights in a row, and we had speakers every night. And I think they're all theology majors that we had come and speak. And I was really trying to put in the message, especially towards the dorms, because the dorms had a huge issue with studio, and they wouldn't often let us use their spaces to practice and to advertise. And I was trying to take and make kind of the message of studio be, we're trying to uplift students. We're trying to reach them out toward this atmosphere of, honestly, I'd say mental health, because comedy really, it brings about a joy that we don't often get, because it's like an hour and a half, 2 hours of just laughter and joy. And that's just such a boost in your mood and in your week and in your semester. And I wanted the dorms to be behind that. And honestly, it kind of was a success. I remember before that season began, I went to Dave Smith's office. It was during the summer. And I sat down with him, and I was kind of very blunt. I was just like, I know you don't like me. No, you don't like studio, but I'm here. I'm directing studio. Studio's here, so we're gonna get along. What do you want me to do? This is my idea. And he was like, okay, go for it. And he came to shows. He came to the series, and he supported us. And he didn't always like us, didn't always like me, but he was always supportive, and I liked that. I was the first female director, and that was also challenging in that if I brought forward like my ideas or like my plans, often it was shut down, and it was, maybe it wasn't because I was female, but I felt very much that my voice was muffled. And I never really got to make the changes I wanted to make. Like fully, I could make small things, but I couldn't make drastic changes. And I think it came from my own fear of, I'm the first female. What if I like get studio? What if I shut studio down? That would look so bad. And so that was a big thing for me. And I think another challenge was dealing with, there was a lot we couldn't do in the show, a lot we couldn't do because of certain rules or understandings of what the school was trying to represent and what we were representing. And really, it was comedy. That's all we were about, was trying to make you laugh. And it was a struggle to see like, we put on a show that was a hit and everyone laughed and loved it. And like the music was fantastic. The skits were great. The audience was super involved. And then I get called into the office on Monday and be told, hey, like, that's not appropriate. We're going to lose students because of that. And that didn't make sense to me, that battle. And so that was a big struggle I faced in the studio.
You might remember when studio performed the Gym Master skit. And if you don't, though it was 2 years later, there was still some leftover distrust and scorn between the Gym Masters and studio. Delaney was determined to heal that before it was all said and done.
I remember as my year's director, I was determined to fix that. I have family who are Gym Masters. I have really good friends who are Gym Masters. And I just hated the concept that, you know, they're studio and Gym Masters and they're not friends. I hated that. And so I remember I called up a couple of friends of mine who ended up saying no, but they were Gym Masters. I asked them to do our, I can't remember what we called it. It was like in the middle of the show, we had like a performance, almost like a halftime show, but it wasn't. And a special guest. And so I asked them to come be our special guest, and they said no, but they referred me to another duo. And they came into Silks during our show, and it was just, oh, it was awesome. And like all of the Gym Masters showed up, And so we had a whole like audience full of Gym Masters, and they were all like, you know, cheering for Studio and for Gym Masters. And it was just, it was so cool. And during the final bow, like I made sure that like they were there for the final bow, those Gym Masters were, because I think it was a moment of healing and a moment where we could really say, hey, like we don't have to be enemies on, we're all going to Southern. We're supposed to have like, you know, a Southern pride, Southern spirit. You know, here we are at SAU, you know, let's support it. But there wasn't until I think that healed it, that event. I mean, I don't know for sure because I graduated shortly after, but.
The thing is, I graduated too, but I knew the next director after Delaney. And if there was anyone left to fight for Studio, it was definitely going to be Angelica Rodriguez. I'll let Delaney introduce her.
I tend to be very hard on myself, and so I didn't think I did a fantastic job. I thought I did a good job, but not fantastic. But Negron and Frood, who are my bosses, came and asked me to do it for a second year as director, which would be my fourth year in Studio. And I was so tired. I was so tired. I was like, there's no way. I can't do it. And I had a cast member who stepped up as executive producer, and she still is. She was just a fireball, and just, she's amazing at what she does. And she's one of the most incredible people I've ever met. And I knew she could handle it. And I knew that she would do a fantastic job. So I gave it to her. And that was one of the easiest decisions I've ever made. It was just like, it seemed natural. And it was good for me not to do Studio again, because it was her last year at Southern. So she could only direct it for that year. And I didn't think it was fair after the heart I saw her put into it, and to not let her have the opportunity. And so that was good. And I remember her first year directing, right before her first show, she called me in a panic, and she was like, I need you to come down and help me. And I showed up, and I was like, girl, you're fine. Like, you're panicking, but you're fine. You got this. Everything was laid out in perfect order. It was cool to watch her take off. It was neat.
And here's Jelly. At least that's what friends like me call her.
Okay. My name is Angelica Rodriguez. I was in Studio for 4 years, and my last year I was the executive director. Yeah, that's what I did.
And she's one of the hardest workers I know. So watching Studio slowly die during her own leadership had to have been really painful for her. Studio really meant a lot to Jelly.
I mean, what it meant for me, I guess looking back at it now, it meant like the beginning of some of the best years of my life, being in college. I'm one of those people who's very thankful for their college time and may always like want to go back to the good old college days. So I think looking back, what it meant to me is like the beginning of a great time. I originally, when I auditioned for Studio, I didn't think I was going to get in it. And I only decided to audition because Armandi, who I had class with, communications, told me that if I didn't audition, he was gonna cry. And me being the freshman girl from Connecticut who didn't know anybody, I was like, well, I can't make this, you know, cute upperclassman cry. Like, that's just so rude of me. So I auditioned to make him not cry.
Thanks, Armandi.
I believe the main challenge that I faced during my time as director was trying to overcome what people had seen of it in the past. So Studio in the past had done some, what I'll say is kind of like, quote unquote, messed up. Making fun of the school, pushing jokes way past their limit in a very conservative school. It had done things like that, and I was trying to overcome all of that. During my year, a lot of staff on the board and higher ups, including the president, wanted to shut me down. They wanted to shut the show down. And that was their goal and their mission my whole time being there. It was difficult. And going through that from a leadership point of view is frustrating, because I started off with Studio at the point of, I'm just an actress, I'm a newbie, I'm just here to like have fun. And because like I started off in such a good light, I guess you could say, like that gave me such a bond with studio. I'm writer, you know, go hard or go home, ride or die for studio and for the cast. I love them. I believe the mission is truly important. So to go from that great foundation to a point of leadership where everyone's kind of telling you like, screw off, go kick rocks, that was difficult. That kind of hurt my point of view for executives because I felt like they weren't really listening or understanding to the benefits of humor. I mean, what's the saying that laughter a day keeps the doctor away? Something like that. Like, oh, laughter is the best medicine, right? I stand behind that firmly. And I tried to show the school that, but people just were not having it for reasons I don't truly understand and don't really accept as well.
Studio's definitely something we all still mourn, and I think that's why these few episodes exist. We're all trying to process the loss of the thing that made us a unique family.
I think the death of Studio, everyone saw it coming. And after COVID hit, I wasn't surprised. I had members my own year of SA who were trying to shut it down. They had no connection with it. They had no reason to be in my business, like my business, Studio's business. But there were just a lot of people always wanting to shut it down, saying that it was a waste of money, that it didn't do any good, which I think is funny because, you know, we don't have to have parties. We don't have to have, you know, Smile Initiative. Those are all waste of money if you really want to get into the financials of it, you know? Like I said, I had a lot of people who were just kind of like against me and yeah.
So you've waited 3 episodes to find out just who or what killed our dear old Studio 4109. And I know we've spent a lot of time talking about any sort of administration of the school, but ultimately the nail in the coffin was...
The death of Studio came from COVID. Everyone knew that it was diminishing. So once COVID hit, it was like the final nail in the coffin. But I did reach out to the past SA president, Cheryl, I offered her the suggestion of switching Studio into something different and better. So I had suggested that we still keep the mission of trying to make people laugh. I mean, you were with me in Studio. One of the things that we always talked about was the reason why we're doing this is to give students a break from school, a break from the pressure that we all face. I mean, look at it. A lot of college students face anxiety, depression. That's when a lot of mental health issues start to come up. So being able to have that moment to take a break from school, take a break from those stressors and laugh at, you know, your fellow classmates making complete and utter fools of themselves on stage. That's what our mission was. So I told Cheryl, I was like, please, like, let's make this into, if you don't want to do a show, maybe we mix it into something with the Smile Initiative and we have people go out and we're still posting videos and things along that nature. I still think Studio has a place at Southern. Is there room for shows like what we've done in the past? I don't think so. Not because I'm against the idea of Studio, obviously I'm not, but times are changing. Things weren't the same as what they were when Kevin started it all. Technology has changed, students have changed. What we're allowed to present and perform has changed as well. So I think there's definitely still room there too.
Jelly's right. This story isn't just about a variety Saturday night show at a small university in Tennessee. It's the story of how a pandemic showed us that maybe some things shouldn't continue as they were in their present form. You remember Kevin Christensen from the first episode in the series? He saw it coming, and so did everyone else. Not the pandemic necessarily, but this new shift in culture and the way that we do things.
You know, I don't think that you can pin it on any one particular person or even thing. I think that, you know, it was what was needed at that time, and it was great for that time. And I think, I mean, you know, just even this last year, you look at how much stuff has shifted and changed. School isn't even in person anymore. It's all over Zoom. I mean, I know that things are reopening, but still, actually, I was just reading an article about, it was from the LA Times talking about how they tried to reopen and like students didn't want to go back in person. There were a lot of students who were still opting to do things over Zoom. You know, everything shifted this last year and changed, and especially live stuff really wasn't an option. But I think also the quality of it had deteriorated over time. You know, there were incidents that had happened that never should have happened. And part of that is, you know, I had had like 4 years to figure that stuff out. And so, you know, like one of the things that I learned was you can push back and you can just say no. What's the worst that happens? You get a complaint about it afterward. Okay. If it was really that terrible, we can try and fix it the next time.
It's been tough to figure out how to deal with, you know, when we make a mistake, how do you have that conversation?
That's Doug Frood, Studio's main sponsor.
I do think over the last couple of years, of course, the pandemic didn't help us at all with how we were doing things. There was, you know, it was challenging to get a crowd to show up. I think we weren't doing as good a job of promoting it to get students to come out. You know, so from a standpoint from the SA, when they looked at their budget and some other things they wanted to do, I get where they were headed. I mean, I get the conversation and I get the challenge that, you know, they were seeing some other priorities and maybe it was time to head in a different direction. So you know, the pandemic probably hastened some things. I don't know if we would have made it another year, whether we could have turned, you know, kind of the crowd around or not. But, you know, I mean, even on TV, not every show lasts forever, right? I mean, there are some shows about, you know, I watch a few like NCIS that have been around for 17, 18, 19 season, but that's the exception, not the rule. A lot of shows, 6 years, 7 years. So, you know, on one hand, 10 years is probably not bad. And obviously there's people on campus thinking about maybe some different ways to go, you know, changing the, you know, maybe some format, doing some different, you know, that might resonate differently. And I wish them the best of luck from that standpoint, because maybe there's still something that can be done, but maybe differently than what we were doing. But yeah, I just think, you know, I was wondering even a year ago whether the format and where we're at, Kevin and I talked about things about whether it was time to change it up just because, you know, the novelty wears off, people move on, different generation, you know, over 10 years, you got, you know, it's a different generation, different things that they've grown up with. I think it was a great thing for Southern for the 10 years. You know, when I was doing that last show, I was thinking about all my former directors, you know, it was an emotional, there were some emotional moments for me as I was watching things and listening to people, because of just knowing the whole 10 years of everybody I'd gotten to hang out with. And that just, you know, the good news is, you know, that can't be taken away from me. I got those memories forever, and I'll have that view, and I have a number of those people hooked up with me on LinkedIn that I can follow and know what they're doing in life, because I feel like I got to know, you know, I got to make some really great relationships, you know, not only with yourself, Kevin, you know, number, I mean, the, you know, the list can go on of the people I got to meet and know, and you know, Armandi, I mean, just a lot of great people, and you know, just a great period of my life that I'm always going to be grateful for. Most people also don't know that this whole thing with Studio started right on the back end of my mother passing away. My mother passed away in May of 2000, 11. And so we were in the midst of obviously discussing, you know, the startup of Studio right when that happened. And at some level, you know, there's one part of me that feels bad. My mother never got to see this, but at the other part of me is, it did fill a part of me at that moment. Losing your mother, even, you know, at 69 years of age, and, you know, had a great life with her, still a big hole. Studio, you know, met a need for me at that time, and going forward, that people will never probably fully understand unless you've been through that, that it was something to put myself into and live out some of the legacy that my mother taught me throughout my entire life. And it gave me some gray hairs, but at the same time, running the group, man, I got to hang out with 100 plus, 150 students over 10 years. It was just a great experience that I can't thank enough people enough for letting me have.
Our show isn't done yet. I want to pass the mic back over to Kevin Christensen again.
And so enough cutting and gutting happened that, you know, it allowed it to get to the point where I don't think it was as relatable. It wasn't as funny. It wasn't as, the music was not as maybe easy to jive with as it was. You know, you just start taking out the things that, you know, eventually it loses its personality and it becomes a checklist. And when that happens, it lost its heart. And so, you know, it got to the end where I talked to the last year's administration for the show, and I encouraged them actually to find a shift. I said, I think Studio's kind of past its prime. I don't know that you can get it back to where it was because, in some cases you've allowed administration to have so much of a grip that you just can't take it back. And again, not all administration, we had some really great administrators, but you know, I've already named them. there were some that just didn't want to see it continue, at least not in a way that looked anything like what it was. You know, and so I said, I think it's time that you actually look at having a shift. I recommended that they kind of reinvent it. And COVID was a great opportunity to do it. I said, you know, instead of prioritizing your live audience, prioritize your audience behind a screen who's watching it. Lorne Michaels said that the best seat in the house for Saturday Night Live is in front of your television. And I said, you know, maybe now's the time you prioritize your digital audience over your live one. Maybe this looks more like a hub for creatives that are doing micro form content. Imagine this Studio 4109 is now a digital channel that is made up of a collaborative group of influencers that each have their own TikTok channel, their own, you know, Instagram platform where they're doing their funny stuff. And then they come together once a week and make these really funny things that they put on this Studio 4109 channel. And it's, you know, and think of how you could help these influencers in that way and actually be kind of a breeding ground for the next generation of influencers. Because now, instead of you trying to figure out how to do, you know, a TikTok channel on your own, you have a team of writers behind you. You have a team of you know, film crews behind you. You have other actors to work with. You have gear, you have very expensive gear to work with that you could do this kind of stuff, you know? And I said, you know, what if you reimagined it in that way? And they were kind of open to that. But you know, the next thing that I heard was they shut the show down, and in the article, they said that they were going to put the funds towards something else creative, some other, and which I'll be honest, I don't buy, I don't believe it. I mean, if that's the case, then give an example.
Kevin asked for an example, and I'm equipped to give him one, straight from the horse's mouth.
My name is Pablo Fernandez. I'm originally from Brazil with some Hispanic ancestry. So, hey guys, this is the flavor that we're bringing off today's show. So I'm a professor here at the School of Journalism and Communication, and I mainly teach the classes that are involved with media production with a mass communication degree with emphasis in media production. That involves more into the video side of storytelling and broadcasting side of it. And I also teach some of the general classes here at Southern with like public speaking. And recently, something that, I mean, you know, we're all growing and learning different things, right, Philip? I'm getting into the social media class. So first time teaching a PR class and trying to help bring those production mindset into creative content for social media.
Professor Pablo, as he's called by most students, arrived on campus during my final year in college, and I think he's the best person to answer Kevin's inquiry. Within the past three school years, Professor Pablo has challenged media production students to look for the next avenue of creativity. Honestly, the school really needed somebody like him. I'm glad we had a chance to chat. Professor Pablo was already thinking about what could happen next on campus. The campus has pretty much every medium, except for its own TV show.
I know if you remember, you or some of your classmates here at Southern took that class. And it was my first time teaching, and I launched the challenge and we create a project. We study more theory and we study a little bit more history of broadcasting. And I challenge them, if you're looking to the future of media, what media would you like to be part of? And what type of project could you create in order to illustrate your vision for the future? So some students did like more documentary, other students were thinking about the idea of podcasting. And with some students specifically, two of them, I reached out personally because I had an idea, but I just wanted to make sure that if this will be something that would be interesting to do, because I don't want to kind of bias their direction, right? But I say, if you're interested into broadcast and television, let me pitch you something and you let me know what you think. What if we create a TV show for the campus? And we're just going to pitch, use this assignment just to pitch this idea to an organization to sponsor it, and then we produce it. So for those that are familiar with Southern, you can think, for example, we have a newspaper on campus called The Accent. We have, for example, a production company at SVED that does projects for Southern and project for other clients. We have a radio station across the street from the SJC, but there's no TV show. There's no like Southern TV show. We did have a late night event that has some dramas, kids, fun, that was a studio and fulfilled that, you know, give an opportunity for, you know, content creators to express themselves, but we don't have a show. And I told them, if you guys will like that idea, I let you guys use that as a class assignment and we see where it goes. So these are students, Sarah Manuel, Aaron Patterson, Dwight Reid, and Jeremy Bellio, work in that challenge, took that assignment, and they created a pilot or something that they pushed the name, let's call this show Ignite, right? So at the end of the semester, that was December, we have our meetings, and I went to our SJC faculty, and I pitched to our School of Journalism Communication, would you like to sponsor this project? Let's try to create a TV show for Southern. And interesting enough, with some of the faculty already involved into other administration roles, knowing that the studio was fading, we have some of those conversations. Pablo, is this an attempt to replace the studio? Is this an attempt, because, you know, studio have very, you know, a lot of people passionate and connected to it. And I say, you know, I don't think this is not, we're not creating this to replace something. We're creating this to give an opportunity to our media production majors and maybe other majors like film majors that could grow professionally since day one. They arrive as a freshman, sophomore, junior, and senior. They can produce content for 4 years and they leave campus with 4 years of portfolio. And that will also, you know, create an environment where our students can interact with each other. They can create content because sometimes we're just doing assignments for classes and you just think about what is my idea? And, oh, I wanted to do this video. So it's all about me. And now when you're creating a project for the campus, it's not about me, but it's about what can I create that will serve our community? And that's how it started. So the SJC approved it, decided to make the main sponsor, especially because, you know, sometimes when students are creating things, there might be other either administration departments, other people that will come and try to censor it. And so now the SJC is the umbrella protecting this. So if somebody gets in trouble, the SJC is in trouble. So we created this, we hired these students to be student workers, and we produced the first season of Ignite. Those were 12 episodes happening on the winter semester. We evaluate that in our main meetings, and the SJC decided to keep sponsoring this project. So now we have one more school year guarantee of funds and people and plans to produce 16 more episodes. So the plan is to produce 8 episodes now in fall and 8 episodes in winter. All this our audience here can check on our YouTube. So if you just put Ignite SJC or Ignite Southern Adventist, you're gonna find the playlist of Ignite under the School of Journalism and Communication. And how this is answering your question, Philip, and that's where it gets interesting. It was in the middle of summer, this was not planned at all. The Office of Student Development reached out to us and said, Pablo, let me give you a proposal, let me pitch an idea. Originally in the schedule, we did have 2 nights reserved for a studio, but now a studio is gone. And our goal is we keep offering things for our campus so our students can be involved and they can have fun and, you know, have events on campus. Would you like to take those 2 nights and do an Ignite show? And we say, okay, we'll do it. We're not here, but I want this narrative to be very clear. We're not here creating the new version of the studio. Okay, so if you need to sell this to other people, other administration departments, this is not a studio new version. This is Ignite. And then we need to manage those expectations, and it will come with maybe a little bit different content. So just to have an idea, what we're trying to produce is more like a late night show. Think about a Jimmy Fallon. So we have a special guest that we're trying to bring in, and we're gonna have a band performing songs, and we're gonna have also games that we're gonna have with the guests and with the audience, maybe some prizes. So that's what we're doing. Is this the new studio? I don't think it is. Will this fulfill some of the things the studio was fulfilling? I think they will, a little bit. And maybe some of the students that were so invested into producing content for studio, maybe if they want to, they can join the Ignite team and they can help, you know, shaping this event to make the best, or the, you know, the most amazing event of the year. Because
the School of Journalism and Communication, or SJC, has been growing like crazy. And this is the department where I received my 4th and final minor in college. I think Professor Pablo's onto something. He was really careful to mention, though, that this new show, Ignite, isn't his baby, but it belongs to students like Dwight Ray, Cameron Reel, Aaron Patterson, and Sarah Manuel. Best of all, they're all not trying to replace Studio, so to speak, but there are still some expectations. And I guess the best thing all of us can do is to hope that they succeed in their mission, and that's to serve those students that are right there in front of them.
I think it's natural, Philip. You know, when you turn on your mic and decide to create content to share with the world, you will always find people that will disagree with your perspective, disagree with what you're doing. There might be people who say, oh, you're trying to just take advantage that a studio is failing. Or like, oh, now that we don't have a studio, now you should have produced these 2 events like we did in a studio. So that I cannot control all the expectations that people might have. I understand that, for example, what matters to Ignite, we are committed to create content that is valuable to our audience, which is our student body here, our campus, and we're committed to discuss topics that are important for them. And sometimes, yes, Philip, we're going to need to discuss topics that, you know, maybe make some people a little bit uncomfortable, but we're always going to do it. Understanding that when we are producing this show, we are representing the School of Journalism and Communication. We're representing Southern Adventist University. We are representing the faith affiliation that we are part of. It doesn't mean that we cannot have a moment to critique the ways that we're doing. We have episodes, for example, the most popular episode that we had on our first season was about the history of racism in this university. And this will make some people uncomfortable. And we're gonna do it in a respectful way. We're gonna make sure that, but we need to discuss those things. And you have other topics that we can, you know, spend hours here discussing. Oh, this might be important. This might be a hot topic. Oh, you're gonna get in trouble today. But I think something important here, Philip, is when we're doing something like with this ambition of becoming the Ignite TV show, if it's just two students running with a camera and a mic up there, whenever you face a big challenge, people will try to push you down. But now there is an umbrella. There's a school that serves as a protection, as a shield, but also as a guidance. Because the ultimate goal for this is not to create storms around campus. Yes, it's to inform, but it's also to give professional training to our students. So right now, at the moment, Aaron, he's our main producer. 4 years from now, his call is to be in working ministry, and he decides to work for a church or a church organization. He will have bosses, and sometimes he want to need to know, how can I discuss a hot topic in a way that will create change, not just create fight? Once we've submitted the first episode, we're open to criticism. And that's part of the deal of being a communicator.
We'll see where Ignite takes conversations going further. But as for Studio, this is the end of the road. I guess the best things do come to an end, but that doesn't mean that Studio is dead necessarily. Studio lives on through all of our relationships, the families we created, the sparks it ignited in creatives finding their way in the world. I think Armandi and Kat know a little bit about this, because once you're a part of Studio, you're a part of something that's just much bigger than you. And that lasts forever.
Gave me more experience writing for comedy. It was something I hadn't really done before, but it made me very interested in it. And that's what I do now with EGOT Entertainment. We do a lot of comedy. And it also helped with my acting, me being an actor and not quite joining SAG, but we're SAG eligible. We're working towards it. It helped with my acting. I think just gave me an opportunity to become a better creator as a whole. And being in charge of Studio, like as an executive director, it was just gave me an opportunity to just see the business side of things and just really prepare me on that side of my career as well. Having to produce things and pay for things and organize and be, the creative kind of nucleus for Studio, for that season. It made me fall in love with being a showrunner and kind of having my hand creatively in everything that's kind of going on. And that's something that I look forward to looking into for the future at some point in time. I'd love to, be a showrunner for my own show. So, yeah.
I'm still very much benefiting from the friendships I have. Phil, whenever I see you, I get the biggest smile on my face, and it's so nice to hear about your studies and your travels and Italia and everything that you're doing and the way that you're thriving. Greg and Armandi, they are great friends of mine. I don't talk to them all the time, but it's nice to see how they're doing. They were at my wedding. Phil, wish you were there. I understand you were in Spain. It's okay. and then Carolina, I see her just on social media. But even though we don't communicate all the time, there's that family and there's the bond. So the legacy, I would say, would just be in the relationships that were formed on the basis of good old fun and comedy.
This was the final episode of Phil's Philosophies podcast, because I've realized I've hit what Seth Godin calls the dip. It's the moment between starting and mastery, a long slog that's actually a shortcut because it gets you where you want to go faster than any other path. My dip was trying to figure out my whole life in my early 20s, and I'm by no means a master at this point, even if I'm earning a PhD right now. I'm still figuring it out. Truly, I tried some things. I tried teaching and hated it. I enjoyed storytelling, but didn't know what career to try. I graduated, I started this podcast, and kept trying to learn from everyone else, when in reality, I think I've always known what I wanted to do. And when I think about Studio, the family we had, the group of people I wanted to support and create with, I've realized that I don't need permission to go and make the things I dream about. To my studio family, thanks for all those laughs for all those years. This show was in part birthed because of what we all did together. And to that 23-year-old, recent college graduate 2 years ago, I salute you. We learned through trial and error, and there's still plenty more of that to go. I don't know what's next, and you don't have to either. But if you keep practicing new skills, putting them to the test, and creating what's meaningful to others, you may find the thing that's most meaningful to you. Maybe I was looking for someone to affirm the spark I always had. And that's the last Phil's philosophy for what could be a very long while, at least in this meeting. Until, well, the next creative endeavor. I'm Philip Warfield, and this was Phil's Philosophies podcast live from Washington, D.C. Thanks for listening to not only this episode or this season, but for all 60 plus of these. And thank you to all of those faithful listeners who joined me in September 2019, those I interviewed and were inspired by, and those who have supported my efforts even now. I'm so glad that I could serve you. Right now, it's time for me to chase everything that I want, and I hope you're there with me on the other side. Farewell.